Welcome to another episode of Sunday World Engage, a platform where we have in-depth conversations with high-profile people and people of public interest in South African politics and South African society. My name is Mpho Koka, and I'll be your host for today. My guest at this hour is the chairperson of the Electoral Reform Consultation Panel, Advocate Richard Sizani. Advocate, good afternoon, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. Good afternoon, Mpho, and I'm very happy to be here.
Firstly, for the benefit of our viewers, can you just share with us your career path? Apart from being a lawyer, I saw that you are a former member of Parliament's National Assembly.
Yes.
You also worked at the Public Service Commission.
Yes, I was the chairperson of the public.
Can you just share with us your career path in law, politics, and the civil service?
Well, in law, basically, I have been, I'm an advocate, admitted advocate of the High Court. I've also been a teacher and a senior lecturer in constitutional law and public administration. When I left those areas, I became a DDG of Constitutional Development at the National, at COGTA now. And then after that, I was a DG, Director General of the province of KwaZulu-Natal. When I came back, I then worked as an Acting Secretary General of the Constitutional Court, Office of the Chief Justice in the Constitutional Court. I left that to become the chairperson of the Public Service Commission for about 7 or so years. And when I left that, I then became an assistant and an advisory position in the Department of Public Works for about 2 years during Patricia de Lille's time and also during Zikalala's time. Then I just left that last year when I was appointed to be chairperson of this electoral reform consultation panel.
Okay. And now, speaking about this electoral reform consultation panel, can you just tell us more about it, as in what is the electoral reform consultation panel? When was it established and why was it established?
You know, we had an interim election in, based on the interim constitution in 1993. And there was always a feeling that that election is not electoral system is not actually permanent. And then Mandela in 1999 also raised the issue: is this proportional representation system that we have, which I'll explain later, the only system that we will keep here? Because there is a complaint that people don't know their members of parliament, and they have no link with them. So we must look at our systems. Thabo Mbeki set up the Slabbert Commission in 2002, but they didn't accept any of their recommendations. Again, there was another one. In 2020, then there was a big fight in the Constitutional Court where the independents now were saying they must have a right to stand and be voted for, and not only for parties, because the current system only allows political parties to nominate members, which you also don't see because you only vote for the name of the political party, both at provincial and at national level. So in 2020 then, the New Nation case happened, and Parliament said because there's a short of time, because government lost that case, they said they must amend the constitution to include the independents. They only amended that issue of independence, but it was felt after 30 years, we need to review the entire electoral system to see if it's still working for people or not working for people. So there was an amendment for the first time, an amendment that was made in legislation, the Electoral Act Amendment of 2023, where Section 23 set up a panel to now consult South Africans for about a year, asking them whether this current system should be changed, reformed or repealed, and what other system should be put in place. We were then chosen by a parliamentary process, then appointed by the Minister of Home Affairs as a panel of 9 experts to look at this matter of consulting people, hearing them on their views for a year until 29th May 2025. We were appointed on the 28th of May 2024, just a day before the elections.
And how were you selected as the chairperson of this panel?
The minister has a prerogative to designate one of the nine panelists as a chairperson. So Minister Motsoaledi at that time designated me as the chairperson of the panel.
Okay. And since this panel was established on the 28th of May 2024, was there ever a period which was open for submissions from members of the public? And when was that period closed? When was the deadline for that submissions?
Yes, we did advertise throughout and gave interviews in August, where we actually called on South Africans to and asked them a simple question: tell us how, why, and whether the current system should be changed, reformed, or even replaced. And we said, make submissions to us from the 1st of September to the 31st of October. So that was our call for submissions. After that, we said, after that, from November up to end of March, we are actually going to be having public hearings, which now my team is doing throughout the nine provinces, and also is doing it even at national level, hearing from people now, geographic space, and also hearing special interest people like civil society and so on. So we did have submissions up to the end of 31st of October from the 1st of September.
Now, from the submissions that you got, the written submissions which you got between the 1st of September 2024 and the 31st of October 2024, how many written submissions did you get, and from which from which sectors of society did you get those submissions?
Yes, we got about 348 submissions. All the political parties represented in Parliament did make their submissions, and also some political parties which participated in the previous election. So there were about, in the previous election, there were about 48 parties that participated. So some of them actually did come out. We also got them from civil society, Abashalba Semchondolo, and other bodies did make their own submission in civil society. Quite a lot of them did that. Academics have made quite a lot. And then ordinary people, and especially also trade unions. And we've also received an interest from houses of traditional leadership and also Contralles.
And you also mentioned that now you'll be dealing with submissions from public hearings.
Yes.
So with the public hearings, you mentioned that they're going to start in March, which is next month. So will they be all provinces, the public hearings?
No. Our public hearings started now in January.
Okay.
And they will finish around March. We've already covered two provinces, that is KwaZulu-Natal and also Western Cape. My team was in Western Cape there. What we do, we usually have three sets of meetings. We have a meeting for the general public, especially in a rural area. We also have a meeting with general public in an urban area. And then we would have a meeting with civil society organizations, including academics and also unions and other bodies.
And from these submissions that you are getting, the written submissions, and the inputs that you are getting in the public hearings up until now, what kind of submissions are you getting from ordinary people, from the civil society organizations, from the political parties and the academics? What kind of inputs are you getting?
Well, there are three sets of inputs. What ourselves are looking for first. We're trying to find them. Are you happy with the current system? What areas you want it change? Secondly, if you want this current system to be changed, or is there another type of system that you want us to look at and to deal with that? And then people are actually criticizing the issue that they don't know their MPs, the issue of accountability. Sometimes a number of them, they even go to the management of the elections, which is not our responsibility as of now. It's a matter for the IEC. But we will write to the IEC and tell them in Parliament what people are saying they are unhappy about the current system as it operates, because we are looking at an electoral system ourselves. So by looking at an electoral system, we are actually asking people, tell us, do you want to vote for a party which is a proportional representation system, and then that party gets the number of seats that the members have done? Secondly, we ask the second question, or there are not other systems which in Britain is called the majoritarian system, which is the first-past-the-post system, where the whole country gets divided into constituencies, and then you vote for one MP. And of course, in that MP, the other parties will contest, but the MP that gets the largest vote, even if it's not the majority vote, 51%, will actually be the candidate to go to Parliament. That is the British system, the Westminster model. And the third system that we've asked them to look at is the one that is called mixed, like in local government, where you have a number that is constituencies, and then a number that is proportional. That means you vote for a party, then you also vote for a particular candidate in a constituency. So those are the three systems, basically, that we are looking at. And then we are asking them to do that. So they are giving us their views. Others say, we want the current system to stay, but we are unhappy about accountability. We also are unhappy about the fact that they are not dealing with corruption. Some of them, of course, raise issues of service delivery. Others say, no, we want to change. We want to know our MP. We want to recall them if we're unhappy. So we would want the local government system where you actually get probably, say, 200 members of that 400 in Parliament being constituencies, and another 200 being proportional, that is voted in terms of a closed list of political parties. But now and we also have a constituency member of that political party and other political parties standing for that. So that is what seems to be coming out. Nobody really, to be honest, has said they would want a British system where all the country is constituencies.
Okay. And then when you look at this process that you are embarking to deal with the electoral reform of South Africa, why would you say this is an important process? Like, why should ordinary people be involved in this process?
The first fundamental notion of democracy is the right to choose the people who should handle your matters. And if you don't participate in choosing who should handle your matters and who should speak for you, and what do you do when you're unhappy about that, or whether you can change or not change them, then you must not cry when things don't go your way. So the first thing is to ensure that basically the country is run by people who are competent, that people who have integrity, that you have chosen them. So the right to vote is a fundamental human right in terms of democracy. So that is why we think people should participate for that. And then secondly, of course, when you put them there, you should hold them accountable and participate in the actions and to deal with them and so on. So it's a very fundamental way of running a country. You can't have, for instance, an executive. You can't have a parliament without having an election.
Mm. And now when you are done with your work, like when you are done with the public hearings,
yeah,
and when you prepare your report, which you'll be submitting to the Minister of Home Affairs on the 29th of May, 2025, So will the panel be involved in other work, like after submitting your report to the Minister of Home Affairs? Or once you submit your report to the Minister of Home Affairs, will your job be done?
Yes, once now once we start writing our report, as we're writing it, there are quite important requirements in terms of the law that we have to deal with. Once we're writing our report now, what will also be important is that we are required by the law not to decide the electoral system, but to give Parliament some options and proposals about what kinds of options there are for them to choose an electoral system. And we must give them the advantages and disadvantages of that system, so Parliament will be able to choose for that system. So around the 9th and 10th of April, when we would have already finished the issues of public hearings and submissions and so on and drafting the report, we will have a conference where now we will close up the issues to talk. It will be here in Johannesburg, where we'll basically give people what really out of the submissions and our research, because we're also doing research and consultations and studying other countries, what really we found as some of the options, three or five options that can work in the context of South Africa. Then we do our report. But what is also important is that that report must also be costed in terms of money, what it will cost for each system that we recommend. And then also we must ensure that it's tested in terms of the constitutionality of the report, whether any of the systems is constitutional or unconstitutional. But we are not stopped from recommending a system that is unconstitutional, as long as we need to highlight to Parliament that we'll have to do a constitutional amendment if we are using this type of thing. Then when we give our report on the 29th of May, that's the end of our role. We give it to the Minister of Home Affairs. He can keep it for 30 days. I don't know what he will be doing with it for 30 days. Then he must table it then in Parliament after 30 days. That is by the end of June. And then it's a parliamentary business right through. We step down and go back to our own jobs.
And now I just want to take us back a bit to last year's 2024 national and provincial elections. So, for the first time in those national and provincial elections, the country had a system where there were three ballots. There was a national ballot, a provincial ballot, and a regional ballot. So, there were independent candidates on the provincial ballot and also on the regional ballot. So, what do you make of that? Because I saw that after the results, there was not a single independent candidate who got a seat in parliament, neither in the provincial legislatures. The overwhelming votes went to political parties. So, when you look at this system which was introduced during last year's elections, what do you make of that?
It's not for me to say anything, but let me say in terms of the submissions that we've received, especially from independents, they are unhappy about the current system, because the current system is a two-tier proportional representation system. You have 200 of seats chosen through regional ballot. And in that regional ballot, that's where you then have also national political parties, and then and that's where independents were also allowed to do that. That is the third ballot that also allows you to vote for your province in that. So there was this one that votes for proportional representation that allows a regional ballot. And the regional ballot then actually has what are called constituencies. And those constituencies are the nine provinces. So you have that. Then the third ballot is, of course, for each province, but based on proportionality. And then there's, of course, the national list of 200 of the political parties. So what happened is that the independents are very unhappy, because they feel if your constituency as an independent is a whole province and voting against and campaigning against a political party, you don't stand a chance. So that's why most independents feel that we need the system like the local government, where actually it is candidate versus candidate in the ward side. So they don't, not interested in the proportional side. They want the constituencies to be there so they can campaign for that. The second thing that the independents were unhappy about is that political parties in this two-tier system, you know, the provincial proportional representation voting of 200, of that, those 200 seats which allocates to the province, they also are taken to include to a political party those national votes that they got in the 200 proportional seat. So then they are put together. Then a party then is said out of those numbers, both in the provincial ballot and the national ballot, put them together. Then they set now what is the quota for a seat out of the valid votes of both national and provincial. So independents only can only participate in the provincial one. So they don't have the benefit of the national vote. So as a result, they didn't stand a chance to win. So they don't really like the current system. They feel it's unfair to them.
Now, with this process that you're going through, so if I understand you correctly, is it possible that there could be a scenario where in South Africa for the first time, whenever there are national and provincial elections, we get to elect an individual as a president? Because with the current system, how it works is in South Africa, we don't, as the voters, we don't elect the president. We vote for a political party, and then the political parties which are represented in parliament elects who becomes president. Unlike in the United States of America, where they vote directly for an individual. So is it possible, as you are going through this process, that there could be a scenario where in South Africa there could be a day where we elect a president from the ballot, or we elect a premier from the ballot? Could that scenario be possible?
Well, two ways, my brother, more of looking at that. First and foremost, our mandate in terms of Section 23 of the 2023 amendment does not give us the task to look at the presidential system or the election of the executive. Even the election of the NCOP, we're not looking at it. We're only looking at the election of the national and provincial legislatures. So that is what we're looking. But ask me, quite a number of parties and participants have submitted to us that they would like the premiers and the presidents to be directly elected, like in America, like in Kenya, like in Ghana, and so on. So they have made that proposal. It's not within our mandate, but we are going to take it and give to Parliament, because Parliament has a right to change and amend the law and even include that. So it is possible if Parliament agrees, but it's not our mandate.
And then still on this aspect of electoral reform, so yeah. According to you, what would you say would be an appropriate form of electoral reform in South Africa? What are some of the features that should resemble an appropriate system of electoral reform in South Africa? Like, how would an appropriate electoral system look like in South Africa?
I'm not allowed to answer that question. I'm not allowed, because our task is to consult, listen, and hear South Africans saying what kind of system they should do. And then we, out of what South Africans have said, make proposals. And of course, we are allowed to research and look at other systems. So that's why I was saying on the 9th and 10th, we will, after now we've listened to all South Africans and heard what they say and what the problems are, and seen the advantages and disadvantages of various systems, we might come then, because we're required not to come with one option, to give Parliament certain proposals and options that can work in South Africa. But what I can only say to you from our side that will give you a sense is that we have an assessment criteria that we've put in place of what kind of an electoral system will work for South Africa. We said, first, it must be inclusive, meaning quite a lot of views. It's a multi-party democracy, must be heard. We put that up ahead. We said it must be fair. So it must ensure that it's also fair to independents, it's fair to smaller parties, it's also fair to a number of groups, including racial groups, if you want. It must be a system that ensures accountability. It must be able to ensure that the government is accountable to its people and can answer for its fault and can fall if it does not operate clearly. So we've indicated that we want a system in our country that the electoral system is manageable. By being manageable, we want a system really that is simple, because one of the problems is that large number of our people are not educated. These things of three ballots and even long ballots where you put them, they won't work for our people. So we would recommend a simple system that is also manageable, so that the IEC can also manage it. If you look at countries like Congo and other countries, for instance, they have ballots as long as 50, because the names of people are there. For instance, if you have one constituency and you have the 30, 48 parties that are there, you have and then you have an open list ballot system where you use individuals, how can an ordinary person be able to choose the members that they want? So we are looking at simplicity and, of course, an affordable system. And the final thing is of course, transparency. It has been one of the problems that is affecting this current system, in the sense that people are complaining now, like, we voted in a particular area and we saw our votes were 10, but suddenly there was nil reported on the board. And others believe, as you have heard, certain political parties claiming that they could have won this percentage, but the IEC system just went blank for hours and votes disappeared. So we wanted to use a system that is transparent, that can know. An electoral system, an electronic system, for instance, would be probably useful. And even automatic registration of people when they turn 18. Those are things that the one. The last point that we have raised in this election, which is quite sensitive, is the issue of government stability. Although our system of proportional representation includes and quite a number of voices and a number of parties for instance, we have in parliament now 18 parties. So one of the things we have been looking at and we've been advised to look at by people is whether we should deal with the principle of government stability and effectiveness. And therefore, that will regulate that parties at least must be less in parliament. And secondly, we avoid this thing of these weak coalitions. For instance, in PE alone, they have had about 21 mayors in one 5 years term. The same thing that is happening in Johannesburg, you have seen that. So now you see now we have this problem we're beginning to have with the GNU, with an ANC that is 40% and a DA that is 20%. And today they say we'll walk out tomorrow. No, we are back. No, we told the Americans, we forgot, we saw, we didn't tell them all those things. So we have to look at that. One of the things, for instance, in terms of constitutional electoral systems, we've been asked to look at the question of a threshold. Do we need to introduce a legal threshold in our system? Some have suggested 1%. And I can tell you now, out of the 18 parties that are in parliament, if we were to introduce a legal threshold of 1%, there will remain eight parties in parliament. 10 who are there didn't even get 1% of the vote. But they then want to be president, or they want to be a mayor, a single party thing. So we are looking at that. But there is another way, of course, of doing quotas, which is a current way, a natural way, where we ask what are the valid votes that have been collected, what are the number of seats that are provided by the Constitution 400, and we simply divide those valid votes with the number of seats that are there, and then it gives us the percentage that must actually, or the number of voters that must constitute a seat. So that is the things that we're looking at and discussing and checking in our system.
Now, I just want to highlight a point you mentioned about the possibility of electronic voting.
Yes.
So we saw in last year's national election, there were a lot of complaints from voters because of the long queues.
Yes.
There were even media reports that some people were at the voting stations queuing, and then because the queues were taking long to progress and move, they felt frustrated and walked back home without even voting.
Yes.
So, and I also realized that the voter turnout for the 2024 national elections was actually lower than 58%. The voter turnout for the 2019 election.
Mm.
Do you think electronic voting can maybe remedy this issue of voter apathy, this issue of lack of voting or lack of, lack of voting interest in South African citizens? Can electronic voting maybe increase the number of people who get to vote?
Well, at the very least, I can say electronic voting and automatic registration of people in terms of when they turn 18 and you are automatically put on the voters register if you are a citizen, and also electronic voting will make things easier. And also, for instance, we have quite a number. When I was talking to our South African exile people in London and New Zealand and Australia and a number of places, they preferred the electoral voting system. And the electoral voting system also will help the workers in terms of people are very unhappy with Section 24 of the IEC Act, where people, if you are at work or you're registered in Eastern Cape and you are here, you've got on the voting day to go back to Eastern Cape. So people were very unhappy about that situation, or you now come out of work late, even if it's a holiday. Some employers don't make it a holiday. So a number of workers have complained that Section 24 now makes them unable to reach their voting station by 7, and then they're excluded. So to a certain extent, it would help. But let me just say, in our own system, although it will help voter participation and increase and make things easier, especially with the youth and so on. But I must emphasize that in our studies, the question of voter apathy and voter thing is related to service delivery, is related to corruption in government and so on. So, and it's related to, again, the fact that there is no complete voter education, especially as you go to rural areas and others. So I'm saying those changes, they will improve. But the truth of the matter is that poverty, unemployment, corruption are things that are making people say, we are disappointed with our parties, we will not vote for them, or some say we will not vote at all. I don't think it's a wise decision, because they should vote and vote for a change that they want to see.
And do you think, earlier I heard you mentioning that in this electoral reform process, there's also a possibility where voters can decide who gets to represent them in a provincial legislature or in the National Assembly, in Parliament. So do you know, from the submissions that you are getting, do you know why voters are actually proposing that they would like to select who represents them in the legislature, in Parliament, and why they would want to recall that person if that person is not performing to the best of their ability? Does it also have to do with this issue of lack of service delivery?
Yes. I must say, and I can openly say, we've looked at the submissions, and you can check the submissions because we're allowed to make them public. That's the most popular thing that has been chosen by people. The one which is called a mixed system, like you would see in New Zealand, and also in countries like Germany, and also even in Lesotho next to us, where then there would be one side that is proportional. Let's say, to make it simple, 200 is proportional, and another 200 is then constituencies. Then in the constituencies, then they vote for individual, even if they come from parties. So they would be able, if Parliament chooses that system, then people would vote for the MPs. They do like they do with ward councillors, where they choose the councillors that they want. And w the reason why people want that, it's twofold. They want to know who's their representative in Parliament. They want to know who they can call and talk to largely. And secondly, they want the power to say, we are not here to be with Mpho. We are recalling him now as this constituent. We want a by-election to be able to elect another person who can account. But also is the question of voter link and so on. People know, then they can hear things, get information and so on. There are systems that are in the current system, like where they try to have parliamentary constituencies and so on, but they've not worked, to be honest. So people want that. And secondly, of course, there's the issue of the independence. The independents would like to have those small constituencies, not the constituencies now that are a full province, where they compete against political parties. They would want to meet the candidate of a political party and deal with it. And a person knows that this is a common drunkard, he's a thief, he's a stealer, and so on, and they can point to that. Now they suddenly know that people are elected and there. So there is a belief then, thirdly, that if you have that system, then you can improve even the quality of candidates. Because now, if you know I'm a thief or I'm a rapist in the area, I won't have to be catched out by IEC and object to me. The people themselves will say, we can't vote for him. This is somebody's son. We know this boy. He grew up here, and that's how we behave. So even then, the quality of voters and their responsibility and responsiveness to the needs of the people will be improved. That is why there is also a suggestion like that.
I think a lot of politicians who are currently in parliament will disagree with that option where they have to be elected by voters and be recalled.
Well, unfortunately, because they are elected, they are the ones who have to make that choice. And we don't know if they'll make that choice. But it's clear, as people are recommending, it's one of the possible choices that they'll have to confront when they choose the system. Fortunately, politicians will choose the system, and our system is driven by political parties, and indeed, political parties will also put their own interest.
And then, if there are people out there who would like to, let's say maybe they did not get an opportunity to make written submissions last year, and maybe for some reason they cannot attend public hearings, is there a way that they can reach out to the panel to express their views?
Yes, we have advertised. We have a website in the Department of Public in Home Affairs, www.dha.gov.za. We also have an email that we use, DHA.gov.za. So we have both an email, and we also have the website that is there that they can reach us, ercp.dha.gov.za. That's where they can reach us and send us any of those things that they are raising them. We are urging people to ensure that they write and send to us latest by the end of March, because then beyond March, we will not be really looking at those things, because we will be focusing very strongly on our report. So during the times of public hearings now that we're still doing in the provinces, yes, you're right, they can still write to us and respond and look at issues.
And are you confident and inspired so far with the participation you are getting from the public, especially in the public hearings? How is the turnout? Is it inspiring?
Yeah, I mean, we had very good turnout in the provincial legislature here in Gauteng. The five regions of Gauteng turned out. And yesterday we were in George, also in Cape Town. There was a very solid turnout. We went to civil society in Durban, Marine Parade. There was a very, very, very good turnout. So I'm happy about that and hopeful about what people are talking. And people now, I must say, South Africans are getting confidence now. They are no longer interested in history and whether how long you spend in the Robben Island or what you did, where and so on. They really want service delivery and things to be done and done quickly, and they want a clean government and people who understand. So they are interested. So the second thing, of course, is that whilst hopeful and happy about this process and the opportunity for people to choose a government they want, I am also, of course, anxious that whether they will this time be listened to by those who have to take decisions.
And in our conversation, you mentioned how coalition governments, whether at local government level, provincial or national, have come out in the public hearings and the submissions that you are getting. So when you get the submissions from members of the public about how coalition governments are affecting them, like, what is it that they are unhappy about?
No, it's the question really that when you are elected on a political platform and a political promise that in these 5 years we'll do A, B, C, D, and so on. And then when you suddenly have this collision and you take probably a 1% person and make a mayor or make a full department or give to a particular party which is less a number of departments, then the issue is that which policy is going to be implemented. Even people now are asking, I was coming here, they're asking, what is going to be the state of the nation, of the president? Is he going to announce ANC policy? But Helen Zille is going to say, that's 40%. We want there to have a 20% input. You see, so that is the real issue about coalitions. They feel people, they don't really know who will keep what promises that they made when they voted. And then, of course, there's also the question of implementation. If we get you now as a mayor and your team and so on, and you collapse like it happens, then there is a DA and other parties alliance taking over, changing everything and investigating everything. And then again, an ANC and other group, and then another group now, like in Pretoria, we have now a group led by Action SA?
Yes, Action SA.
Yeah, person. People then, there's not going to be implementation there. And then people don't know who to hold also accountable for that. So there has been those problems about the coalitions, the question of government stability, effectiveness and implementation of policy, and holding who accountable for what and complaining to who for what. So there is a problem. But looking at electoral systems, it's unlikely that countries will now get parties that have 50 plus one.
And allow me to play devil's advocate right there on this point of coalition governments. So as you are getting your inputs as the panel, do you like in a way engage the people who are making the submissions, especially in public hearings, since it's a face-to-face interaction, and ask them as voters, why don't you give 51% plus to a certain political party? Because the reason why we, in a way, find ourselves in coalition governments in the first place is that no party got 50 plus one or 51% plus. So you'll find that a party, the largest party, is number one with 46%, or it's number one with 36%. So shouldn't the voters also, in a way, like, be answerable to that as to why didn't you give one political party 51% so that you can get that stability you are talking about? So do you engage the submissions of the members of the public?
Although we don't really have a mandate about the formation of government and coalitions, but we have engaged members, and what is coming out from them about this. First and foremost, the South African electorate still vote historically. This was my father's party. We were born in this party, like church and so on. So we will vote that. We can't disappoint. Some, for example, will say we can't disappoint President Nelson Mandela and so on. So this is Mandela's party. Sometimes we'll vote that. So there is still that. And of course, there's still in our electoral system racial voting that comes out. That, for instance, to a certain extent, white people would vote to a certain extent for a white party, or what you would call white parties. So there is also still that difference. So, and then there's the question of literacy. Our people are still unable, like Bob Richain, to calculate and do what you'd call strategic voting, which is what you mean. To say now in this ward, it's clear the good person here is that guy who has been put by, let's say, Action SA. Although I am coming from the PAC, or I'm coming from the ANC, but my vote, I will give it to that guy from that ward. So the strategic voting is still not there. It's still historical voting. It's also still struggle voting. And still also racial things, and also the question that our people are still not strategically aligned to say, what will I get for what I'm voting for, which is what now a voter education would teach them, and which, with the youth also participating now and listening to different voices, this is what is happening. And the last election does show that people are actually beginning now to say, we will do that. But the most disappointing thing, as you are indicating, out of the number of people who had actually registered, only 58% voted. And a number of people who are more than the people who actually voted. Because if you look at these parties, even if you look at the total, this 40%, for instance, for the African National Congress, or 20% for the DA, is out of valid votes of those people who voted. It doesn't include the invalid votes. It doesn't include the people who didn't turn up. So part of the problem is that some people who are disappointed, this is what they need to be encouraged. They feel, then I'll just stay at home and not vote. The young guys just do a party overnight and they drink, and then on the election day, because the holiday, they just sleep and not go and vote, because some are just saying nothing will happen, nothing will change, these people will work for themselves and so on. And it applies to all parties, not to a single party. Even if other parties would take over, these things would happen, unless there's a system that changes and enforces that different culture happens, and our people get stronger and know about their rights. and fight for them. That's why civil society and the media and guys like you are very important in actually telling people the state of the country truly and fairly.
And then with this electoral reform consultation panel process, by the time you submit your report to the Minister of Home Affairs on the 29th of May 2025, what is it that would be an achievement to you as a panel as we embark on this process? What would you say this is our achievement?
Really, our achievement, for once, we are elected by statute. We are independent. We've been given a longer period of time to consult, to do research, and so on. And secondly, we are not asked to choose one system. So we have a latitude to give South Africans a menu to choose from in an electoral system. We are required to tell them what are the advantages and disadvantages of each system. We are required to say what are the costs of the system. We are required also to indicate what are the legal implications of this system. So when we give South Africans, even people who study political science, even youth, they will know more about electoral systems. They will know more about their choices, and there'll be a voter choice now. And also political parties will have voter choice, and they will understand the disadvantages and disadvantages, or the advantages and disadvantages of system. So when we put that as professional team before parliament, and actually it will also be published, then South Africans will have actually a choice. And it will not be something that is actually imposed, like in the interim constitution with the current electoral system and then the laws made. Then the second thing that we have done out of our own conviction, we've said, okay, we are not asked to look at management of elections and problems relating to elections. We are asked to look at electoral systems, what system to vote for, and to choose your people who can govern. But we are going to write a separate report about the things we picked up in the elections, the complaints about the IEC, the complaints about service delivery, the performance and non-performance of members of parliament or not known and so on and not accountable, and the failures of local government that we are being told, and what councillors do and what they don't do. So we will give them separately so that they, when they do the electoral law, they can actually be able to even look at those things, even the complaints about the questions that since I voted in the Eastern Cape, now I'm in Gauteng, I can't now vote unless I go to the Eastern Cape. All those practicalities and so on, we'll give them so that when they draft a new law, after they have accepted one of the proposed electoral systems that would have made, then they would be able to have that experience of people also told to them and given and published.
And then will it be the members of parliament themselves, once they receive this report, will they be the ones to decide which new electoral system will be used?
Yes.
Will they be an act that will have to be passed?
The electoral, the members of the electoral of parliament, they would have to adopt our report through the portfolio committee of home affairs and then taken it to parliament. And if it does not require amendments to the constitution, then they will of course make a new electoral act based on that system, and then there will be again public consultations of people based on that act, and that system will only operate, it does not apply to the 2026 local government elections. Our system will apply in the 2029 elections. So they will have enough time to consult and also make the new laws and the new changes and tell people about it. And then it will only work for provincial and local government, provincial and national government elections in 2029. And then if, as you were hoping, against hope, that they might even probably decide themselves that they want to include election directly of president or election directly of a premier, but we are not talking about elections of a premier ourselves. So that's what will happen.
Okay. And then, advocate, from your side, is there any further information that you'd like to share with our viewers regarding the work that you do in this electoral reform consultation panel?
You know, I know in South Africa today, people no longer trust anybody. They believe that salt and sugar are the same. So basically, you can't trust anything. But I can say to us, we are a team of 9 professionals. We're not carrying any mandate for anybody. We are independent. And we are going, they must come and talk to us and give this. We are going to give back to Parliament and their elected representative their views quite clearly stated and quite clearly expressed, and that they can trust us that we are not just ticking boxes or playing games. So they must know this is a serious thing. And they must take this as one of those last chances where they can have a chance to turn the governance of this country, to ensure that they get quality representation, to ensure that they get accountable representatives, and they can ensure that the country is governed by people you trust. Like, that's what philosophers used to say, that if you allow fools and as educated people not to participate, to stand for elections, then don't complain when fools govern you.
Well, on that note, advocate, thank you very much for your time. I feel enlightened and informed after this conversation we've had. Thank you very much for joining us. Thank you for your time. We really appreciate it here at Sunday World.
Thank you very much. I'm also grateful to Sunday World. I hope they send this message out. It will help us a lot.
We'll definitely do that. Well, folks, this was another episode of Sunday World Engage. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to like this episode, comment on the description below, like our YouTube channel, subscribe and share it. Until we meet again, thank you.